KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from East Oakland.
I live in West Oakland.
Tenderloin.
The Mission.
I live in the Bayview Hunters Point in San Francisco.
Coming up, John's arrested for soliciting prostitutes sit down for an unusual kind of sex ed.
People don't know what prostitution really is, the unglamorous version of it.
Then we catch up with singer Lydia Pence on her long-lasting legacy in the Bay Area.
I guess it's just the joy of the music. You know, I'm very fortunate to still be able to sing and still be able to move, you know.
And it's story time with a twist.
How can I make them laugh? How can I let them have a kick out of what is happening?
The latest from Audiograph, all that's coming up today on Cross Currents. Even though buying sex is illegal in most of the country, the majority of people arrested for crimes related to prostitution are women selling sex. The federal government recently began cracking down on websites that host sex ads, but some sex workers say that punishes them, too, by forcing them onto the streets. Well, John School takes a different approach. It's like traffic school, except the goal is to educate people who've been arrested for soliciting prostitutes. KLW's justice reporter Holly J. McDeed spent an 8-hour day with a class at John School.
About 30 men and one woman sit in an empty jury room in San Francisco's Hall of Justice. John School is in session, and a nurse named Douglas Long is about to give these students a lesson they probably haven't heard since high school sex ed.
Every person you're with, every person that that person was with, or every infection that person had, you could be exposed to that. You see where I'm going with this?
If they don't, in fact, see where he's going with this, Douglas has a slideshow presentation on the ready, and it is about to get visual. There is a photo of herpes, there is chlamydia, there is gonorrhea.
It's a dangerous world. There's this idea that you can look at somebody, you can walk down the street and see somebody and say, oh yeah, she's not clean, I better watch out. Okay, the point is, you can't tell.
Everyone in this class has been busted by the cops for trying to buy sex. The deal is, if they finish John School, they have the chance to get their arrest record sealed. It's a diverse bunch, early 20s to early 60s. A guy in a suit, a married couple who hold hands. The people in this room do not look happy to be here. They clap meekly, like they're scared of seeming too excited.
Thank you very much for your attention. Please, be safe, use common sense, and have a good life.
The rest of John School is a day-long crash course on manhood, objectification, and sex trafficking. Instructors talk about everything from sex addiction to emotional violence to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. One man in the program, who we'll call Malcolm, is practically a star student as far as John School goes. He seems eager to take this class and raises his hand to answer almost every question. We're not using his real name, and we changed his voice to protect his identity.
It's really degrading to me to think that I could have been a part of that or do something like that.
Malcolm was caught by an undercover cop during an online sting operation. He says he was working 80-plus hours a week, and buying sex seemed like a quick way to reward himself and find some release.
When you don't really do anything for yourself, you kind of get brain dead inside, too. And then you have all these other issues happen to you that, like, affect you and make you not think properly anymore.
After he was arrested, Malcolm learned he could get his record sealed if he attended John School. He was so grateful he even assigned himself homework before the class. He listened to TED Talks on sexual exploitation and read up on human trafficking.
I made a mistake, and that mistake could have cost me a lot. And it's really important to make sure that I take it very seriously.
John School started in 1995. It was the beginning of the dot-com boom. Wealthy residents were flocking to San Francisco. When they saw sex workers on the streets, many of them called the cops. Jails were packed with people arrested for selling sex. Terry Jackson was an assistant district attorney in the city at the time. She remembers sitting in her office one day, flipping through arrest records for people charged with offenses related to prostitution.
When I was looking at the people who were being charged, they were all women. No, they weren't even women. They were young girls. But never the Johns, as we used to call them, the people who were exploiting these young people.
Soon after that, a cop and a former sex worker walked into her office. It sounds like the setup for a bad joke, but they were serious. Norma Hotalling, the former sex worker, shared her story. She said she kept getting arrested over and over again. Even the cop said he was tired of that same revolving door.
And they said, we have a plan. We can make a dent, maybe a small dent, in ending the cycle. And that's getting to the people who are paying for this sex trade.
Terry told them she was in. And so, with backing from the DA's office and funding from the city, John School began. What made this program so groundbreaking, Terry says, was that it created a space for people who had been exploited to speak to buyers directly.
But they had to understand how their conduct impacted not only the young girls and boys, but the community and our whole system.
Now there are John Schools in dozens of cities around the country. In 2008, the National Institute of Justice released a study on John School. It showed that people who attended were at least 30% less likely to be arrested for soliciting a prostitute. But some researchers, like Samantha Magic, are skeptical of those findings.
Nobody can say for sure whether these men are now just getting smarter about how they purchase sex or perhaps doing it in another state or city.
Samantha is a political science professor at John Jay College in New York. She says that arresting Johns still criminalizes and stigmatizes the sex industry. And that, she says, can make sex workers even more vulnerable.
No matter who you're targeting with criminalization, you're forcing this kind of work further underground.
But at John School, you won't hear lectures from researchers like Samantha about decriminalizing the sex trade. And you won't hear presentations from women choosing to be in the industry either. John School doesn't leave much room for the possibility that sex work could ever be consensual. The whole point of the program is to teach men that buying sex is inherently wrong.
Can everyone stand up? Everyone stand up?
But students at John School will hear from one woman pressured to work in the sex industry. Sylvia Perry introduces herself as a former prostitute. She encourages the Johns in the room to loosen up. She wants everyone to know she's not here to shame them.
Can everyone jump up and down? Jump. Okay, you gotta jiggle the liver once in a while.
Sylvia talks about her childhood growing up all over the Bay Area. Her dad hit on her friends and would tape porn to the refrigerator.
And from my earliest memory, I was rewarded for dressing and acting sexy. And I think I even did that today just to get your attention.
As an adult, Sylvia worked at massage parlors. She felt sexualized every moment of her life, and she hated it.
It got to the point after every session I would go into the bathroom and chant, I've got to get out of this.
It's clear Sylvia has been through a lot of trauma, but not everything she says is backed by science, like when she talks about male and female brains.
Women's and men's brains are different, right? Have you ever noticed, like, a man, if you ask a man how they are, they're like, great. If you ask a woman how they are, they say, you know, oh, I have my period, it's raining outside, my car doesn't work, I have a doctor's appointment, you know that thing?
After the talk is over, she hands me a sticker that says boycott porn and prostitution. Not all people in the sex trade agree with that sentiment. But for Sylvia, sex work was exploitative and it was degrading. And she says people should at least consider that perspective, whether or not it's true for everyone in the industry.
People don't know what it really is, what prostitution really is, the unglamorous version of it.
But that's my take on it. And through the filters of my life.
It's hard to tell if John School is an effective way to address sexual exploitation. But Terry Jackson, who helped start the program, says what matters is that the city is trying something different, something other than arresting women who are pushed to sell sex to survive.
Will I say that it ended the sex trafficking in San Francisco? By no stretch of the imagination. You know, my grandmother always told me, just make an impact. And that little impact can cause other things to happen.
Since John School began, there have been national movements to end the demand for paid sex. Around the country, there are billboard campaigns that target Johns, and initiatives where residents write letters to sex buyers about the impact of their actions. But because the demand hasn't gone away, John School is never short of students. In fact, the next John School class will take place next month. A dozen or so people will once again file into the Hall of Justice. There, they'll get a lesson on the sex trade they probably won't hear anywhere else. In San Francisco, I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
Holly is KELW's justice reporter. You can reach her at justice@kelw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Lydia Pence is the lead singer of the soul band Cold Blood. They were one of the first acts signed to iconic San Francisco promoter Bill Graham's Fillmore Records in the late 60s. Along with Oakland's Tower of Power, Cold Blood helped usher in the Bay Area's brass-heavy funk sound, known as East Bay Grease. In this edition of Bay Area Beats, Pence sat down to share some stories from her long and illustrious career.
But good God almighty!
I don't know. I just love doing it. I've done it ever since I've been 13 years old. And I think that if I wasn't singing now, I'd probably go crazy. I'd probably lose my mind.
Baby, do you believe me?
My name is Lydia Pence. I was born and raised in San Francisco, California, on Noriega Street. And I'm living in Sunnyvale right now, still in the Bay Area. And with a group called Cold Blood, who's been together since 1968.
Please, let me die easy.
This is a trip. My dad, he brought home the first reel-to-reel tape recorder in 1958, and that was my toy, right? You had to unplug this and plug this in, and you know, it was all in the back and everything. So I would play records and sing along with them and record, you know, my voice and stuff with them. Well, since I had an older brother, he was 5 years older than me, he listened to all the black R&B artists at the time. And I mean, we listened to anywhere from the Coasters. The Shirelles. Mama said there'll be days like this.
There'll be days like this, Mama said.
And I grew up on that. I just listened to that stuff, and I loved, you know, the music. And that's what I listened to mostly back then. And now, too, you know.
I went walking the other day, and everything was going fine.
I just want to make love to you.
I was in a band called, what was the first one? Before Cold Blood, it was called, The Invaders, right. It went from The Invaders to The New Invaders, and then a lot of those people went established in Cold Blood and stuff. We had two drummers at one time. Since I listen to a lot of R&B stuff, bands with horns, you know, a lot of music with horns in them, I dug the sound, you know, the big sound like that. And we had four horns at one time, right? And right now we just have two, but that's what I like, the sound of the big band kind of sound with the horns. We were sitting around one day, and we were going to be playing at the Fillmore, right? The Cold Blood group. And we had a name. We had to think of a name for the band. And this was before we got the name Cold Blood. And we were sitting around, and so Hobson's Choice was one of them. We went by that name for like one gig. And then we came back and said, we got to think of a different name. So our drummer at the time, Sandy McGee, bless his soul, he thought of Cold Blood, not Truman Capote in Cold Blood, but just Cold Blood. And at the time, you know, that saying, hey, that's cold-blooded. So we got the name from that. We got, you know, used that.
Came on a rainy day. Lord, I feel so bad. Yeah, yeah.
Got to be good.
Playing at Winterland back in the day, Bill Graham's places, like Winterland and the Carousel. And, you know, back then, what was neat about it was, like, he put on the bill a lot of different types of groups. You know, you'd have maybe the Electric Light Orchestra, and then have, you know, some R&B or some Tower of Power, of course. I remember one time sitting back there at the old Fillmore, waiting in the back room there, sitting backstage with a lot of those old, not, I don't mean old players, but back in those times, I remember, I mean, that was something I'd never forget about, because I'd be sitting there and I'm looking around, I'm thinking, man, this is history, you know. I used to write down a lot of stuff, you know, throughout the years and things. I've got it scattered everywhere. And people ask me, says, why don't you write a book? I says, I should before I forget all this stuff. But yeah, there's some pretty wild things throughout the years that went on. What was the question? I guess it's just the joy of the music, of being able to do it. You know, I'm very fortunate to be able to still be able to sing and still be able to move, you know. And playing with all these great musicians throughout the years, man, I go through a lot of horn players, but there's a lot of great musicians throughout the years, and fortunate for that.
That edition of Bay Area Beats was produced by KLW's Beau Walsh. You can catch Lydia Pence and Cold Blood performing in San Jose this Saturday as part of the Blues and Brews Festival. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now it's time for an audiograph, signature sounds from around the Bay Area.
Do you know how a drag queen does it? Let me demonstrate, and then if you repeat after me, you go, hey! Hey! Thank you very much.
From our archives, reporter Corinne Smith brings us the story of that sound.
Oh no. Here it comes.
Walking into the San Francisco Library in Bernal Heights on a Saturday afternoon, I see it's packed with excited, brightly clad kids and caregivers here for story time. Wearing a black sequined gown, stilettos, and a platinum blonde wig, seated with long painted nails holding a book. It's Yves Saint Croissant, a.k.a. Sean Santos, one of San Francisco's beloved drag queens.
Oh, my goodness. Please don't ever make me read this book again. It's so silly. In fact, it's completely and utterly preposterous.
Welcome to the Drag Queen Story Hour, where San Francisco's queens take the show to a different kind of stage to perform story time.
It's just too ridiculous to read. The end. Bonk.
Jenny Proenza and her 5-year-old daughter are enjoying the show.
It's so nice to see a little slice of fabulous in Bernal Heights, so I couldn't resist the opportunity to pop in.
Mama, don't speak in the microphone.
You like and it? One thing that was really nice is that we had a whole conversation about gender and identity that came out of this this presentation. Just the presentation as far as dress and options in fashion choices and identity, which is something that we talk about at home a lot as a non-gender conforming family. And it's really nice to see that reflected out in the world, especially for Pride.
Radar Productions has organized readings in New York City, Los Angeles, and the Bay Area. The queens choose their favorite books like Worm Loves Worm, My Princess Boy, or this one that Yves Saint Croissant likes.
Oh yeah, My Teacher is a Monster. That's a new favorite of mine. When I first picked it up, I found it surprising that this teacher was actually a monster through perception, and I liked that. Through bonding and going through an experience outside of their normal everyday, they were able to see the true soul behind. And sometimes we don't see like the true beautiful nature of people.
The Drag Queen Story Hour was founded in 2015, and since then it's grown across the country. There have been 6 library readings this year in honor of Pride Month, and dozens more in classrooms and bookstores. One takes place a week after the Bernal Heights reading at the Diamond District Rec Center in Oakland.
Wow! This is so exciting to have you all out today for Drag Queen Story Hour, the East Bay debut of this program that's been happening.
Oakland's first Drag Queen Story Hour is a hit. More than 300 people show up for story time with Beatrice Thomas, whose alter ego is Black Benatar.
How do you normally say hello?
Hello.
Do you know how a drag queen does it? Let me demonstrate, and then if you repeat after me.
You go,
hey!
By the second book, kids are on their feet at the front of the large circle, jumping and laughing through the story. Some recognize books like This Day in June. It's a story of the annual Pride Parade and everyone who's a part of it.
This day in June, parade starts soon. Rainbow arches, joyful marches.
We have that
book. It's a good book.
3-year-old Ezra Goodman Lucker shouts out during the show. His papa, Carrick, says the queens are a positive role model.
So we were explaining drag queens to Ezra last night. My partner said that a drag queen is someone who is a man most of the time and on special occasions likes to put on really fabulous clothes and really beautiful makeup. And so Ezra said, I want to be a drag queen. So we said, hooray, fabulous.
So this day in June, we are all united.
Oakland Library administrators say they've gotten lots of requests to make Drag Queen Story Hour a recurring event all year long. It's the same in San Francisco. Back in Bernal Heights, after Yves Saint Croissant's reading, there's face painting, there's cookies, and kids line up to meet the queen.
That is just a feeling that can't be explained through anything else. I think what it stems from is me feeling a little bit uncomfortable and the feelings or the desires of wanting to dress up or be creative and play with my gender a little bit. The feeling of acceptance, I think, does a lot for the little boy inside of me that didn't feel, I mean, that was like a really dark place for me. So it's almost like the opposite of depression and darkness that exists within me. So it's healing.
And the good is reflected by the audience.
Like there was a little girl today that was like, he was wearing girls' clothes. And she was so like open about it. I was like, yes, I am. And I mean, her parents kind of were taking the lead and like, you can dress up however you want. You could be a boy one day, a girl the other day. And I just kind of let them take it. And I happened to be wearing bright blue lipstick today with glitter all over it. I'm like, and you could even take it a step further and wear blueberry lips that sparkle in the sun.
As families pile out of the library, they're glowing. And you can see the sense of pride on parents' faces, almost like satisfaction they had shown their kids something important, a day at the library where beauty and wonder don't end with story time. For Cross Currents, I'm Corinne Smith.
If you'd like to go to Drag Queen Story Hour, there's one being held this Saturday morning at the Oakland Public Library's main branch. Find all the details at klw.org. And while you're there, make sure you're subscribed to the Cross Currents newsletter. Get all this information, interviews, stories, and more in your inbox every week. This music is by The Robs from San Francisco. They're performing at Neck of the Woods this Saturday night. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.